Empire of the Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like I'm booked. Wet like I'm booked. Wet like I'm booked.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to another episode of the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I am a reporter, writer, editor for ArizonaSports.com.
Yeah.
I am joined by Kevin Zimmerman. He does the same thing for this website we are on. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Doing well. Ready for that Thanksgiving, and I missed you. And I did a Thanksgiving video for our social media accounts at the station, and I said a bunch of stuff that was about Thanksgiving, and you were supposed to be in it.
Yeah, did you have to do it alone?
Yeah.
I'm assuming they did like pairs so people wouldn't have
to
talk by themselves.
They actually didn't, so it's fine, but okay. We would have been unique.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to talk about Thanksgiving, you could pop in there.
I'm okay. I'm struggling to talk as it is. As you guys can tell, since last episode when we recorded last Wednesday, I believe, so 9 days ago, I'm still feeling a bit under the weather, but like I said then, going to battle through it and going to continue to do so.
Suns won. You got better after the Suns won. I wonder if that's related.
I don't feel good about my health if it is directly related to the Suns' level of play. That's probably a bad sign for me. I'll be in a lot of hospitals if that's the case.
Lots of hospitals.
Speaking of hospitals and the Suns' level of play, I don't want to call it a roller coaster this season, but there are bumps. If you're looking at it like a line across a graph, it is jumping and then it just sinks and then it jumps and then it sinks, because the Suns are now 3-11, but they have had three wins where they have looked like a competent competitive basketball team, and they have had 10 losses where they have looked like the worst team in I would say 9 losses when they looked like that. When they look like the worst team in the league or one of the two worst teams in the league. And then the Celtics game, they really, really fell apart, but they played well in that game. And then the Toronto game, I thought, was one where they at least showed a little bit of fight in the second half. So now we're at this point where something we talked about last podcast or two podcasts ago was like this podcast tone would have been completely different if we were to have recorded it then or now. Because it was just straight despair after that Boston game. Igor Kokoshkov took a lot of heat for not fouling, and then it turned out that he wanted to foul, but then the players said the plan was not to foul, so there was clearly miscommunication there, but he followed up the next day and said, yes, the plan was to foul. So that was extremely worrying. You pretty much summed it up best in your tweet by saying, what was it exactly that...
I have no idea.
I think it was pretty much
I blacked it out, apparently.
It was pretty much either there's a large miscommunication between the players and the coaches, or the players just didn't listen to the coach.
Yeah, and you hope it's not that second thing, because that means they are just done.
So it's either a really bad thing or a really, 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 really bad thing. Either way, it was not good, and then they proceeded to lose... looked terrible against the Pelicans on the road, looked terrible against the Thunder on the road. That Thunder game at least had a bit of a run in the third quarter, but I don't think that cancels out how poorly they played in the first half. So there's just a lot of different ways to talk about the past week and a half of basketball they've played, but I think a good place to start is Josh Jackson. We're going to kind of run through a couple players individually, and Josh is the first one to come up. He scored 14 points against the Spurs. They're coming off the 116-96 win over the Spurs, where they looked very good and the Spurs looked very, very bad. Josh played well. He got this push floater working in. He looked to play with a little bit more patience. He had 3 assists. His passing was working. Looked like he was playing at a good level compared to where he was before. But with that being said, he joined Pickley and Murata today on Friday and said some concerning things. I don't really know what else to call it. The full quote is, I don't know how to play bad basketball. I've never been a guy that plays bad basketball. Whenever my team is playing bad, whenever the team is just all over the place, I'm going to look bad too. I am going to call bullcrap on that, because he looked great. In not great,
two
but
games.
But he looked good in two games, but also He looked good at the second half of last season, and the Suns lost 15 straight games in the second half of last season, and they were losing a whole lot more than they were in the first half of the season, and that's when he played some of his best basketball. So I don't really know what he's talking about. And then he said, it made it a lot easier for me when we were all on the same page. We're in the right spots and where we were supposed to be. We were all playing for each other, moving the ball around. I'm not really trying to call out Josh here specifically. What I'm speaking more to is just a lack of synchronization with this team as a whole. It feels like so many guys are in so many different places right now. I just don't understand where Josh is coming from by saying this.
So you can interpret this two ways. One, it's not the right choice of words, right? It almost reads as if you're blaming others around you for playing poorly, at worst. At best, it still means he's not conscious of where he's at, because he was also asked in that, do you know, basically, why do you think that your minutes have not been there? Like, and he says, I'm not the one to ask, or something to that degree. And it's like, you don't realize if you look at most advanced metrics of guys who have played like above 15 minutes, he's at the very bottom by a huge degree of 250 or 280 players or something like that. And I know those are advanced stats, and I know.
Well, PER is not something that can really judge a player's effectiveness. But with that being said, he has a 4.41 PER, which just speaks to his level of ineffectiveness as a whole.
And if you just look at the Spurs game, for example, there were flashes of good stuff and flashes of bad. But again, there was that period in the second quarter where the Spurs were down like 19 and then they made a run to catch back up. He was on the court during that dry spell for the offense, and he ended up as like, I think, one or two guys with negative plus minuses, and that's because of the unit he's playing with. But that's just highlighting how much of a zero he is, even if he's playing defense. And so that's what I wrote about. His push floater was working, and he hasn't shown that, even though after the game he said he's always had that. He has not shown that. He's oftentimes blowing by everyone, seeing a lane going 100 miles per hour and throwing the ball off the backboard, trying to hit a soft floater, which is not soft if you're going 100 miles per hour. He's struggled to play make out of those situations, and he did a better job against Spurs. But all of this is to say that you worry, like all of last year, that he's not self-aware that, hey, you need to be something else than you are trying to be. And it's just another interview where he was asked good questions by Bick and Vince, and it just is, I don't understand it. And if I don't understand that, and then you look at his performances, then you understand why he hasn't gotten better.
So to look up what you were just talking about, among players in the league who have played in at least 10 games this year, and they average at least 15 minutes a game in those games, he has the worst net rating in the league. It's minus 20.7. The next closest guy is Mo Bamba at minus 17.2. Yes. There are only about 25 guys in the league. I couldn't count this in time while you were talking. I was trying to make it in time, but there is around 25 guys in the league who have a minus 10 net rating or worse. He is one of those, and just the gap, though, there's only four guys in the league that have a minus 15 net rating or worse, and he's one of those four, and it's minus 20.7. Like, he is
far and away. It's who he's playing with, too, but yeah, he's not helping.
But to take us to that point, it's to that net rating, it's like a net 93.8 offensive rating. That's horrific. A 114.5 defensive rating, that's horrific as well. And this speaks to the problem this team has right now, which was what we've talked about. The third worst guy on that list is Trevor Ariza. He's at a minus 16.7 right now. So those guys aren't really sharing the floor that much. And
Mikal Bridges has been coming off the bench also, and probably has close to a positive or a zero, if I'm guessing off the top of my head. But
by the way, my favorite thing about this is the guy who leads this statistic, the best net rating for those guys, he plays on Portland. Who is it?
Stauskas?
Seth Curry. 18.1 net rating.
How much has he played?
He's played in 14 games, 17 minutes a game. 91.4 defensive rating when Seth Curry's on the floor. Just an absolute unit defensively with that guy out there. Tony Snell, Maxi Kleber, Brooke Lopez, and Danny Green in the top five. That's beautiful. I love that. But that just speaks to his ineffectiveness, which is something we talked about. And why I get concerned by those quotes is because he is not in a place right now where he can afford to be in that kind of mindset, if that makes sense.
He should be like, oh, crap. Now, just took,
do his quotes on a radio interview over the phone reflect his actual mindset? That's not what I'm saying. Again, Kevin and I have talked about this for 3 years. We really hate going to that level and talking about a player's in their head and what's going on. But the bottom line is he needs to be saying all the right things right now because of the way that he's playing, and it doesn't sound like he's going to. To take this to our next topic while keeping Josh in the conversation, his playing time has gone way down, and that's because Mikal Bridges has been playing much, much better than him, and he has deserved more playing time. Josh has played under 10 minutes in three of the last five games. He had 7, 5, and 7. He had 19 against the Pelicans, but that was really a big blowout game where Igor was just throwing guys out there. And then, of course, he played well against San Antonio at 22 minutes, but then 13 and 12 in the other two games in November. And that's because Mikal Bridges deserves more playing time, and that's because Igor Kokoschkov still feels like he needs Trevor Ariza out there a whole lot. Where are you at on this entire thing? Because the biggest point of discontent among the fan base right now from my son's Twitter bubble, which is not reflective of the entire fan base and not reflective of all the people listening right now, but I think most people listening to this would agree they want to see Mikal Bridges just start from this point out for Trevor Ariza. I quote tweeted Brendan Kleen's story on Bright Side of the Sun today. It's just not that simple. Trevor Ariza was one of the marquee free agents in this class. They talked to him as the second they could. They called him at 12:01. They signed him that day. They're paying him $15 million. In my opinion, they just have to keep starting him and playing him and hope he plays better. And if he doesn't, I don't really see what other option they have but to keep playing him, because they have an obligation to him to play him. And I saw Brennan taking some heat for this thing, which I think he expected and everyone would expect. And one of the responses was, like, you don't owe Trevor Ariza anything. He's playing like crap and he's making a lot of money. He should be fine with this. And it's like, well, now we're going down two different lanes, where the one lane we were going down all the time was the Suns have to treat players better.
Yeah.
And now they're just going to flat out bench this guy for a rookie.
You could get away with doing it with Tyson Chandler.
Like, yeah.
Speaking of which, Lakers fans who are like, thanks, Suns, you should pump the brakes a little bit. Tyson's played well in two games, but Trevor's in a different arena as far as he's a guy who could start on almost any team that doesn't have a, you know, star forward, an all-star forward, you could even argue. Is he playing well? No. Is he playing terribly? Like, I still am not going to go down the road that he and Ryan Anderson are like. People who blame them and even Isaiah Kanan, went back to it. Those three guys, people always put the blame on them. It's like, if Josh is better, if Dragan Bender's better, I think Igor would play them. They're not terrible, and again, they're not being put in position to do well. That being said, like, if we look at just pure performance, it looks like Mikal Bridges is a guy who fits a lot better and is not overplaying overplaying for what his skill set is. Like, if I look at Trevor Ariza, I look at his biggest issues have been over dribbling, too much playmaking.
But that's exactly what Igor wants his wings to do.
Right.
And he's committed to doing it. Mikal Bridges had some nice drives here and there, but he's more of a support player at this point, and that's...
He fits it better, almost.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know how to even describe it, because They're playing the same position. They theoretically should be asked to be doing the same things. But if I said if Trevor Ariza did what Mikal Bridges is doing, he would look better. But I think Trevor Ariza might just be trying too hard because he cares. Like, I honestly think that's the case. I think I don't see a lot of terrible possessions. Like, he hasn't played well, yes. But yeah, to go back to Brendan's point and your point, you can't just bench him for a rookie, even if our eyes are telling us that's possibly the best move. Do you think Trevor Ariza is going to play better off the bench? No. Mikal can play just as well off the bench, and if he's hitting shots and getting hot, then guess what? He's going to be in at the end of games anyway. So I think when he comes back, I think Josh is the one again who has to kind of worry about it when Trevor Ariza gets back from that personal issue that he's going to miss, what, this next game with.
And Mikal's minutes are going up, too. I think the tone of the fan base, which is completely valid because of the crap that they've put up with over the past 3 years here, is a little bit too demanding right now, in my opinion. It's just like, this guy can't play, this guy can't play. It's like, why don't the rookies start over Isaiah Cain? Why isn't Eli Okobo starting over Isaiah Cain? Well, in the last seven games, Eli Okobo has a negative 15.7 net rating, and he just went to the G League because he was not playing well, and they gave D'Anthony Melton a shot now. And now D'Anthony Melton's going to get a shot. And what happens if he doesn't play well? Well, now we shouldn't just play point guards. We just shouldn't play point guards at all.
Then you're playing Devin Booker, and then that's what no one else wanted.
Then you're playing point book the whole time, and that's just not what Igor Kokoschkov is willing to do. Yes, there's a fine balance between playing your best players, putting them all out on the same court together, and maximizing what you're getting out of Devin Booker or whatever. But the main conflict, I think, is Isaiah Cainan isn't doing many point guard things when he's on the court anyway.
Yeah.
So why do you feel like you need a point guard out there?
Right.
And that is something where, look, I'm going to be completely honest. I've had this conversation on Twitter for over a week now, and I haven't gotten to this point yet because I just don't want to sound like a mean person when I say this to contradict someone, but I'm not a basketball coach. I've never been a basketball coach. I don't know how much Igor is getting out of having a point guard out there, but guess what? He's a really smart guy. So I think that if he feels this is that bad to the point where he needs to keep playing Isaiah Cain in 30-plus minutes, where he needs to keep playing Trevor Ariza 30-plus minutes, there is a reason behind that, and he's doing it. I think we can give him the benefit of the doubt here. People can question whether he's a good basketball coach or not because we don't know, and that's completely fine, but he needs these guys out there for whatever reason. I think I replied to someone during the game on Wednesday. It's like, you guys just need to accept the reality that Isaiah Cainan's going to play. I'm sorry, you just need to. And then people were like, well, why can't I? And it's like, you can be upset by him playing. That's fine. I'm not saying that's not fine. I'm saying you just need to accept that he is going to play. Igor feels the need to have a point guard out there, and that's what's going on right now. And it goes back to this, I think people are overreacting a bit to certain things. Like, we're talking about net rating with Mikal Bridges and how much better it is when he's out there. You know who has the best net rating on the team in November? Jamal Crawford. And I think we can all agree that Jamal Crawford's not been the best player on this team in November, or has been one of the three or five best players on the team in November, but the team's playing better when he's out there, and that's what the stat tells us.
Yeah.
So I don't think we just need to fully rely on that and say, I agree to a certain extent. I do think Mikal Bridges has played better than Trevor Ariza this year, and I do think that the team plays better when Mikal is out there as opposed to Trevor. But let's just not act like it's as simple as the numbers are there, play him. It's like, well, should Jamal Crawford play 25 minutes a game now or 30 minutes a game now? Right. I just don't think it's that simple. By the way, true shooting percentage in November, these last seven games, Mikal's at 57, Trevor Ariza's at 57.1. So Trevor's starting to get his efficiency back a smidge, just a little bit, but he's still way down, and they still need to figure this out, especially defensively. He has 110.8 defensive rating in the past seven games. When he's on the court, that drops to 95.8 when Bridges is on the court or when they're playing together. And that's where the issue lies. They just can't be a bad defensive team when Trevor Reese is out there.
Do you want to hit on Point Book was really interesting against the Spurs just because of that assist total and how much he's getting blitzed now on pick and rolls, and he's turning it over a ton, but he's also learning to trust his teammates. There are a lot of huge threes at the end, second half of that game, I guess, where Book like just kicked it to the right guy for a wide open three, and that's kind of, I don't know, it's at least promising to see him learning to diagnose that stuff once he realizes from the get-go at the start of a game that he's getting attacked in that way.
The main difference is that last year teams were aware of how good he was and they were just flat out double teaming him at points, but they didn't really specifically game plan for him. I get a sense as a whole, and maybe this is just because we're in the first 15 games of the season, that teams are taking the Suns a lot more seriously this year. And I can't tell if that's because they think the Suns are better, Devin Booker's better, or they realize how important every game is in the Western Conference now.
Yes.
And that if you drop the first game of a back-to-back against the Suns, and now you have to go play the Clippers the next night like the Spurs did and lose that game too, going 0-2 during that stretch might cost the Spurs a playoff spot. That's just the way that the West is going to go right now.
Who brought that up that I forgot what team, but there was some team in the West that is actually like circling the Suns and the Kings on the calendar, I think. And
the Nuggets, yeah. It was Zach Lowe brought that up on his podcast.
And it's just like these games are even more important than, you know, if you split a series against another team that's, you might get a tie with going into the playoffs or something like that. Like, I'd rather have a win over the Suns and beat the Suns and the Kings every time down, because then I just maybe don't have to worry about tie breaks and all that kind of thing.
So like I said, I'm not sure what three of those reasons it is why teams are game planning so much. I think it mostly has to do with how good Devin Booker is now. Teams are flat out game planning against him now and having the big come out a lot more, cutting off his lanes, even when he has like a one-on-one on the wing. He had the ball on the right wing against San Antonio. TJ Warren was on the left wing. Dante Cunningham was standing at the free throw line.
Yeah.
And he was like, if you drive towards the lane, I'm going to cut off this space. And he was a step and a half too far away from TJ Warren. So Booker just didn't even make a basketball move. He just passed it to TJ. TJ hit the three. And that encapsulated the entire game, really, and what was going on. It was great to hear Booker after the game. He said a really funny thing, which I think no one has tweeted or anything, that those were my scoring days. He said something along the lines of like, yeah, that was back when I was a scoring guy.
They're gone.
I just want to win now. So he was kind of saying like, yeah, like I was scoring 40 or whatever, but if I have to have 12 assists and 7 turnovers and only score 13 points, then that's what I'm going to do because this is his team. He's the guy. So that was great to hear. You can tell he's getting more comfortable with it, but there's only a certain level of comfort he can reach because he's still not 100% back from that hamstring strain, and that's the one overlying thing on this team that I think isn't getting enough attention. He's still clearly not able to explode off that hammy.
He looked good at the very start of the year. Like, we talked about it, I think, one podcast where it was...
He was just faster. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's probably because he's not 18 anymore and he's 21. Wow. What happens when he's 27 and actually a mature man person?
Man person. Love that.
Yeah.
So I think that seeing him adjust to it going forward is going to be interesting because I think he just realizes when he has the ball in semi-transition or he has a switch already, this is one of my like 9 moments in the game where I'm going to get a clean look probably or have a good chance to create a clean look. And that efficiency on those isn't quite there yet because of what we just talked about. But I think to talk about another player briefly and just bring him up again, because it's really not that complicated to talk about TJ Warren. It's like he's doing the scoring stuff that he always did, but he looks a little bit better off the bounce now because now he's playing the four. And, of course, his three-point shot is just absurd right now. And when you have a guy like that who can put up 25 any night, like he used to be like, yeah, he can give you 20. I think he can give you like 25 any night now. I'm not saying he's going to average that, but if he scores 25 or 31 game, I'm not going to be that surprised. And he is giving them the scoring boost that they need. That Spurs game, they're just one Josh Jackson or Jamal Crawford not good performance away from losing that game, in my opinion. But they had Josh play well. They had Jamal Crawford shoot well. TJ had 27. Even DeAndre is like 17. That's where that really helps you. And it's more about them playing well together at the same time. That sounds very simple because it just is. He's going to need three or four other good performances to help him. He can get them there. It's just a matter of, can you hit these shots that I'm creating for you?
The interesting part about TJ is we talked about this last year against the Spurs. When the Suns didn't have Book, teams can lock down on TJ pretty easily. And that's because, like, he is not a great one-on-one isolation guy. Like, he's not Joe Johnson per se, but if you give him the ball in a favorable spot, and especially, which Igor is really good about, is giving him in a favorable spot and on the move, or at least his defender's on the move, but if both are on the move in different directions, then TJ's so good at slicing through, you know, taking a couple dribbles, taking an awkward shot, using his body to get a floater off. Like, there was that one a couple games ago, he had a post up and he got it low in the block with a smaller player on him and went over, I think it was his right shoulder, or maybe it was his, it was an awkward like spin move where he turned as he left the ground with his back to the basket. And he just like banked it in. You can put him in awkward spots and he can figure it out, but he still needs to be put in spots. And that's the key. He's like a big where you have to have a conscious effort to get him the ball. And they've been better at that after he had a lull in the middle of this stretch to start the season. Do you want to talk about DeAndre? He had an interesting quote you said from practice today.
Yeah. So I wrote a piece on, was that Monday or Tuesday? It was one of those days where Igor Kokoschkov was asked about him. And this came after Dwayne's story for AZ Central and the Arizona Republic, where Kokoschkov said he wanted DeAndre to be more aggressive coming out of games. And then Dwayne brought that quote up to Ayton, and he said he's not really sure what Kokoschkov is talking about. I like to feel myself out in games. I like to get in a certain space and kind of feel myself out. And then he comes out on Wednesday and looks to assert himself immediately and is showing the aggression that Igor was talking about, and it worked out for him. So it just feels like the thing we talked about with him a lot leading up to the draft and after was that he's raw. It's going to take time. But I think that element of it is actually into his mindset a little bit as well. You can tell that he's still thinking a whole lot and still not exactly sure, not what type of player he is, but how exactly he takes himself as this type of player into games, if that makes sense. It just looks like he can't figure out in terms of picking spots or starting with a certain level of this or that. It's not as simple as him. It's not as simple as him coming out and just playing all out 100% every single minute. He's just not there yet. It's more about him figuring out when to do that and when to do this. And that's where I see him struggling the most. And I say struggle lightly because he's playing pretty well for a rookie still. But the thing that I wrote was basically, we talked about his defensive instincts, we talked about his physicality, and we talked about his individual offensive creation. And those three things really showed in the past four games. The Brooklyn game obviously was a huge one that we talked about on last podcast already, where Kenny Atkinson was just basically daring him to dribble and he didn't dribble. We've seen the defensive instincts. There was that opening dunk in OKC where Terrence Ferguson was on the three-point line driving into the rim. Ayton was right there, and he just didn't look like he was sure, do I take a step over and put your hands up, which, yes, you do.
Probably do that.
So he just kind of danced, and he was like obviously focused, oh, Steven Adams is probably going to get a dump off here, and it's still indecisiveness there. And then physicality, I think this is the number one thing that I've seen fans pick up on the most, where they've just kind of realized that outside of that Bertans poster that he had against San Antonio, he is not the type of guy to put you under the basket and dunk on you. That's just not the type of player he is. That's something we talked about for almost a year, over a year about him now, because we were talking about him back in November of last year, and we've talked about it for over a year now, that he's just not exactly that type of player. He's more finesse at this point, and how he matures as a 20-year-old center in this league, does he become that overwhelming beast monster type of player when he's 24, 25? Because I think when to finish here on that point, that's what impressed me about Embiid the most right away. Remember when he came back and he was just humongous?
Yeah, and he was angry.
And he was playing angry all the time, and he was just overwhelming guys physically all the time. And I think you can see him do a Euro step, or you can see him do a step back three. But the most impressive thing about him right away when he started playing was just how no one could handle his size at all. And Ayton is that big of a guy. It just needs to progress. And, of course, Embiid was 22 when he started playing, so it's gonna take time, but I think that is seeing how those three weaknesses develop from now until his fourth year in the league. Where do those course correct and where do they not is going to determine how great of a player he is in this league.
Josh had an interesting comment on that, because I think it was Vince who asked him straight up, do you have to remind DeAndre that he's good at basketball? And Josh is like, yeah, he admitted, I do tell him sometimes, like, remember, you're that good and we expect that out of you and you can do these things. So that's part of the learning curve. And I think to go back to your point about him trying to figure out who he is and what he can be and overthinking and all that, the Spurs game was good in that, and I think we'll see this as they replay teams and replay players, where he defended LaMarcus Aldridge pretty well. Like, LaMarcus had 6 points, I think, the second time around after he absolutely destroyed DeAndre the first meeting between the Suns and the Spurs. And after that first game, DeAndre was so complimentary and talked about all the hooks and all the little tricks. And so it's good to see progress from the standpoint of at least individual defense, where it's like, hey, I'm comfortable, I've learned against this specific player, and I know what to watch out for. And at least, you know, there are other factors in it, but he looked a lot better against LaMarcus Aldridge the second time around.
And to wrap on him and kind of look forward to the next couple of games, he had a quote today, which is what you asked me about, which I didn't talk about because that's what I do. I just don't listen ever. Fair. He said that when we're losing, I'm more learning. It's like, I'm learning, not losing. That was kind of his mentality. And that, again, just plays back to what you just said and what I just said, where he is clearly still getting the hang of this. As, God, this sounds so basic and like a negative thing to say, but it's not just like learning how to be a basketball player.
Yeah.
It just kind of seems like that's where he's at right now, and realizing, oh, okay, if I just play super aggressive and I do crazy fast rim runs, and I can't remember the term that he used, but it's when he sprints up the court in transition, seals someone off, and gets an early bucket. I think he's already realizing, if I do that and I get 4 points that way within the first 5 minutes of the game, I'm going to be in a pretty good spot the rest of the game. And that was the 14th game of the season.
Yeah,
when he did that. So it's going to take time for him. And I think that is the main takeaway for him 14 games in for me, is not this is that was not a parade went by any means and saying, haha, we were right, you guys were wrong, look at Luka, 40, 50, 90, he's averaging 19 a game. It's nothing like that. It's more of, he is a far, far, far from finished product, despite him being this guy who is currently averaging 16 and 11 and shooting 60% from the field and is ultra productive, high floor guy, but he's still just so far from finished.
Yep.
And that's where watching the Suns develop around him is going to be the most interesting, because there are clearly some of these games where they need him and he's just not there. And they need him to be there all the time this season, and that's just not going to be the case. And to look at that, looking ahead to Saturday, They play OKC for the third time in 15 games.
Get him out of the way.
Steven Adams did not play in that first game. If you'll remember, he had something come up in warmups, and then Nerlens actually started the game, and Nerlens had a really good night against him. But his first time playing against Steven Adams was 5 days ago, 5 days ago from Saturday on Monday. So to take it to the little Marcus point, how much did he learn? He had a really good quote saying, Steven Adams is a funny guy. He begs for his teammates to miss sometimes so he can battle on the offensive glass. He said Adams will sit there, and he like did like a little accent too. He's like, please, please, please. He's just sitting there begging for the shot not to go in. And he said it's a Mother Nature type of thing where there's an extra level of masculinity and strength that comes over Adams when there's an offensive rebound attempt.
DeAndre said this. He does have a nice beard.
Just further confirms my theory that Steven Adams is just the best.
I think I saw Steven Adams' comments on DeAndre. He's like, yep, he's good.
Yep.
He's going to be good.
Yeah, I love that guy, man, so much. To cover that, like, to have that guy around
just
the team.
Just go talk to Steven Adams on Saturday about DeAndre.
Yeah, seriously. And to take it back to our starting point of the conversation, Josh, Trevor, Mikal. Trevor Ariza is not going to play on Saturday. He is still out due to personal reasons. He did not play on Wednesday. Mikal Bridges started. You guys all know this. Wishing his family and everything well. Some people are not doing that on Twitter. And to you, I say, be better tomorrow.
Yeah.
Come on. There's clearly something going on here between his family. Wish him the best in sorting all that all out and coming back to the team.
Do better, Twitter.
Yeah, do better. So now we will see Mikal probably start again tomorrow, and it's just going to be really fascinating to see what if this is the point where they take a step forward and then actually take another step forward after that. They actually have two great games in a row. I don't want to say wins, but if it's two wins in a row and they play like they did on Wednesday, they don't play again until Monday on the road at Philly. If that's where Ariza's back, what does Igor do? I don't think he's going to bench Ariza, but it's just if your team's playing its best basketball when you've been so desperate 15 games in for this type of consistency to at least show itself, you don't really want to change anything.
He might not. He's been quick to change.
He's been a lot quicker. We thought Ryan Anderson was going to start for like the first 20 games of the year, and he's barely playing anymore now. But he also has a true shooting percentage of like 29 in the month of November. So that's not great.
It's not great.
But luckily they have TJ Warren, who has arguably been the best player on this team without Devin's play the last three or four games.
See, yes.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. That's nuts.
It happens for like stretches here and there.
All right, we will be back. I don't know, because next week is Thanksgiving. The Suns play a four-game road trip after this OKC game on Saturday. They're in Philly, Chicago, Milwaukee, and Detroit. Not sure if we'll podcast next week, Thanksgiving stuff. Who knows?
Have a happy Thanksgiving,
hopefully,
though.
Hopefully I'm healthy by then. It would be a nice change of pace in my life for once. I've just been dying for the past 2 months. It's not great. Everyone send your good vibes into the universe for old Kel over here, all right?
Good vibes your way, man.
Good vibes as always.
Thanks for listening.
Always with the Phoenix Suns. Yep, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you next time.